Hello and welcome back to In Conversation With, an interview series by the JLAP chapter at UCL, wherein we speak to exceptional individuals within the legal sphere, such as judges, lawyers, academics, and other legal professionals. I am Sahana Karthik, the president of the JLAP chapter at UCL.
Hello, my name is Maj Mansour, and I'm the engagement officer for the Junior Lawyers Against Poverty chapter at UCL, and I'm also the first year representative.
Today, we are thrilled to have with us His Honor Nick Madge, a former circuit judge trying civil and criminal cases for 14 years, a current visiting lecturer at the University of Westminster and University of the Arts London, and he also works very closely with the Slynn Foundation as a judicial trainer. Nick, thank you very much for accepting our invitation to interview.
It's my pleasure. Good to be with you.
So you were initially a human rights lawyer who later transitioned into a judicial role, initially undertaking the position of a district judge and later becoming a circuit judge. Could you elaborate on what this change was like for you, especially when you began trying criminal cases involving serious offences?
In one way, there's no change to the fundamentals. The fundamentals, both as a solicitor and as a judge, were really three things. One, people, listening to people, trying to understand people. Two, the law, the framework of law procedure that we work within, both as solicitors, barristers, and as judges. And thirdly, and probably the most important, is justice. And people talk about being passionate about justice. I'm not sure that that's the way that I would put it necessarily. Justice is something which ought to be fundamental. It ought to just go through the core of us. It ought to be part of, I guess, every moment of our waking days of our lives. And so those three key things, people, law, justice, were fundamental, both as a solicitor and as a judge.
Perfect. Thank you for that. Your upward career trajectory and your level of success is clearly what most law students aspire to attain. Therefore, we'd just like to ask, what advice would you give to students who are looking to pursue a career in human rights law? And what can they be doing whilst at university to become involved with such projects and demonstrate their passion for a cause in interviews and applications and such?
I think that it's maybe helpful to explain briefly where I come from. I grew up in a small mining town in the West Midlands, largely working class community. No one knew any lawyers. My parents were both teachers. I did well at school, and I got a place at Cambridge because I did well at the exams. And in those days, there was a local newspaper, local news, and because no one in this community had studied law, they sent someone along to interview me. And the woman interviewing me, she'd actually been in the same class as me at school the year before, said, Nick, why do you want to study law? And I said, because I want to do something which involves an intellectual or academic discipline, and I want to do something which involves working with people. And for me, that was a way future. What I then learned, I spent a summer working with kids on summer play schemes in Belfast during the height of the Troubles, both in Catholic and Protestant areas. And what I then learned about was injustice. So I didn't go into law with the idea of I'm going to make lots of money. I didn't go into the law with the aim I want to be a successful lawyer. I went into law, I guess, wanting to help to achieve justice and actually to do it as well as I can. So looking at it in terms of being a student, I think that there are really two things that I would say. One, be as good a student academically as you possibly can be. It really is competitive out there. When I was a partner at Bymans, and we're talking 25 years ago, there were 800 applicants for four jobs as trainees. And I imagine it's far worse now. So one, you really need to do as well academically as you can, not just so that you get a good degree, but also so that you build on the fundamentals of your legal knowledge. The second thing is, don't just be a lawyer. Be as broad a person, as rounded a person as you possibly can. Have as many experiences as you can so that you really understand life, you really understand the world. So yes, make the most of your time doing as well academically as you can, but doing as many varied things outside the course as you possibly can.
Thank you. I think your initial interest, as you mentioned, in wanting to achieve justice is clearly evident actually throughout your career, because you have a vast amount of experience in writing and publishing texts as well, such as on topics of housing law and civil procedure, and have served in the Civil Justice Council and Civil Procedure Rules Committee. So how have your multiple contributions to journals and publications of various books contributed to your career, and have they improved your knowledge of the law? And would you recommend that law students should also explore legal writing and journalism outside of their demanding academic requirements? And if yes, why?
The best way of learning is, in fact, to teach and to write. You cannot be a good teacher unless you understand. You cannot write unless you understand. So I guess there are two answers to what you were saying. One, the teaching, the writing that I've done throughout my career has been a very good way of making sure that I can understand. The second thing is that it's an issue of communication. And one of the things about law, about practice, about judging, is being able to communicate. And obviously there are two sides to communication. One is actually what you as a lawyer want to get across. And in many ways, the most important writing that I did in connection with that was not the writing for lawyers. In a sense, that's easy. The most important writing was writing for lay people. So some of the early things that I wrote about were explaining the law, both criminal law and civil law, for play leaders, so non-qualified people working with kids. And if you're doing that, you've got to put potentially complex legal issues into simple and straightforward language. And again, you can't do that unless you actually understand.
Perfect. Thank you so much. As a result of that, we will definitely be trying to do as much writing as possible within our own legal careers in the future. So next, I'd just like to ask, obviously, we were introduced to you through Catherine from the Slynn Foundation, who you work very closely with. The foundation is an amazing educational charity that works with senior judges and justice institutions around the world to improve justice systems and the rule of law in general. You were specifically involved in a program wherein you support the Tanzanian judiciary in their attempts to reform court procedures to render them more efficient and effective. What does the project and your role specifically actually entail?
The Slynn Foundation, as you rightly say, is a charity working with judges, other legal professionals overseas. It's important that we share the knowledge that we have. And so this is not a white man going overseas and saying, this is how it should be done. It's a matter of sharing and exchanging knowledge about judicial issues. Now, part of my experience has been in judicial training. I worked with the English and Welsh Judicial Studies Board and English and Welsh Judicial College, training English and Welsh judges. So not just about law and procedure, but also judicial skills, judicial capabilities, what are sometimes called the soft skills. The project, the Slynn project with Tanzania, is really sharing the knowledge that we have with the Tanzanian judiciary and helping to supplement issues relating to the rule of law. So we've had symposia discussing current legal issues with Tanzanian judges. What I've principally been involved in is working with the Tanzanian Institute of Judicial Administration on their campus and running training the trainer courses for Tanzanian judges and magistrates. So the aim of that is so that the Tanzanian judiciary build up a cadre of judicial officers who can then run similar courses for Tanzanian judges and magistrates. So it's really building up issues of sustainability, not us saying this is what you should do, but us saying these are ideas that you can build on and translate into the particular circumstances in Tanzania so that you yourselves can improve the quality of the Tanzanian judiciary.
I think it's very interesting that you mentioned soft skills, and in a similar vein, you wanted to talk about transferable skills as well. So outside of your legal career, you are also incredibly passionate about, and you've found success in, travel writing and photography. And you're in fact a published travel writer, and you even have an MA in documentary photography and photojournalism from the University of the Arts, London. And you have completed a travel writing course at the London School of Journalism. So law students often overlook the importance of investing time into non-legal hobbies and interests. So would you say there were any transferable skills that you've gained as a photographer or as a travel writer that have been relevant to your legal career? And how can a law student effectively balance the time they dedicate to the law and to their external interests?
Absolutely. All knowledge that we gain in all fields of life is really important. Before becoming a solicitor, I worked in a petrol station selling petrol. I worked in the bottling plant of a brewery. I hitchhiked around the States. And all of that is about listening and communicating and being able to relate to anyone from whatever background, whether one's talking about ethnic background or whether one's talking about class background. Let me just tell you about two particular examples, and I think that will show. One, I was cycling in a fairly remote province in India, and a teenage girl came up to me, and she had very limited English, and she asked me three questions. What's your name? What's your country? What's your occupation? And I lied because I couldn't say I'm a judge cycling around India. It just wouldn't have made sense. So I said I'm a teacher, which wasn't totally untrue. She came back just as I was about to cycle off with an older man who went through the same questions and then said, oh, really? What kind of teacher are you? And I said, I'm an English teacher. He said, oh, that's fantastic. I'm the teacher at the local school. Will you come and give an English lesson to the pupils? And so I did. In a small village, they got every student in the school into one room. And it was all about sharing knowledge. It was all about communication and being able to do that. And if you can relate in that kind of situation, you can relate with any client, you can relate to any litigant in any courtroom. The other thing which I just wanted to mention was on the same holiday, I actually met an assistant DA from a southern state in the United States. And we talked. She'd actually gained experience as cabin crew before becoming a district attorney. And we worked out a program whereby every law student in the whole world would have to work as cabin crew for 3 months before they were allowed to qualify. And that would simply give them more skills. And they'd all be better lawyers if they'd done that. One of the things that I'm doing at the moment is working on a photographic project called Pandemic Portraits. And what I'm doing is I'm going into the town centre in St Albans, where I live, with my camera. And it's a year-long project working with the local museum. And I'm going up to people saying, can I take your photograph, please? And I'm taking photographs of people both wearing COVID masks and without COVID masks. And I'm asking them to write down a few words, no more than 50 words, about what they think about the pandemic and how it's affecting them. And I'm producing these as digital diptychs, which will be part of the museum exhibition. They're going on social media, etc. And that, in many ways, is very similar to what I was doing both as a solicitor and as a judge. It's listening to people. It's hearing what their concerns are. It's communicating with them. It's giving people a voice. It's allowing people to express how they're feeling about the pandemic. And just as a human rights lawyer, just as a judge, I hope that I was giving people the opportunity to express themselves.
That sounds very interesting, Nick. I actually had the opportunity to look through your Instagram, I believe it was, and take a look at the project for myself. And I'm sure we could include your Instagram name just so our listeners can take a look at it as well. But thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's a very interesting story about becoming an impromptu English teacher abroad. And then finally, just to wrap things up, do you have any other final words of advice for law students or young lawyers like myself and Tahana as to how to navigate their career and make significant contributions to the legal world?
My mother always used to say, the more you put into life, the more you get out of life. Do everything as well as you can. Contribute as much as you can. And things will probably work out. I had no intention ever of becoming a judge. Things will happen along careers. You need to be flexible. You need to take up opportunities. You need to know yourself. Need to know what works for you, and then just go for it.
Thank you, Nick. It has been a pleasure to be able to interview today. And we really appreciate your insight, both Matt and myself. And I'm sure that all the other students listening will as well. Thank you so much for your time.